Going vegan is not always easy. Some people find it elitist, expensive, extreme, and even weird. But every major medical organization agrees that we should be eating more fruits and vegetables. Mayim Bialik plays Dr. Amy Farrah Fowler on CBS's popular sitcom, The Big Bang Theory. She also holds a doctorate in neuroscience from UCLA and has two children. And she went vegan 20 years ago. Mayim Bialik loves to cook, and she's poured her efforts into a new cookbook. She joins me and John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant this hour to share recipes for vegans, or even vegetarians, or even meat eaters who would like to add more veggies to their dinner plates. Midday Eats with Mayim Bialik of The Big Bang Theory after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday Friday, our second hour. Dan Rodericks here. That music means it's time again for Midday Eats, our monthly foodie hour. Joining me today and every month, Midday Eats contributor John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant in the Baltimore Museum of Art. John, nice to see you.
Good to see you, Dan.
Henry Hong is not here today, but we have to congratulate Henry. Henry and his new wife, Sarah, are off on their honeymoon. So this month, it's Midday Eats with just Shields, without
just
Hong and
just Shields.
But congratulations to Henry Hong. But we also have a very special guest to fill in very nicely for Henry Hong this week. The actress Mayim Bialik is probably best known for her starring roles on the television sitcoms Blossom and currently as Dr. Amy Farrah Fowler on The Big Bang Theory on CBS. But she's also an accomplished writer and academic who holds a doctorate in neuroscience, John. Neuroscience.
Pretty impressive.
And she's on the show today because of her cookbook, Mayim's Vegan Table. Mayim Bialik is vegan, not to be confused with vegetarianism. Veganism is a diet. Some call it a lifestyle choice. That means you consume only plant-based products. So no eggs, no milk, no dairy, or anything that remotely comes from an animal.
Yeah.
I want to welcome Mayim Bialik on our show today. It's great to get this talk with you and about a terrific subject, too. Mayim, welcome to Midday on WYPR.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And John Shields, it's great to have John with us for this subject today because John, like Mayim did 20 years ago, John went through this transformation. You're pretty much completely vegan now, right, John?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to say that I was vegan, but I have to say that I'm vegan-esque. Because I'm also known here in Maryland as Mr. Crab Cake. I have,
right.
You know, one of the defining Chesapeake Bay restaurants. And so I have made that transformation over the last number of years. So about 95% of everything that I eat is vegan.
That's amazing.
And yeah. John, you did it for health reasons.
I did it for health reasons, but as Mayim can tell us, you know, when you do one thing with this, it takes you in many directions, you know, so you have to start to look at ethics. You start to look at environmental impact of how you eat. So it's fascinating. I love it, actually.
Mayim, tell us about your transformation. I said 20 years ago. I think that's about right.
I became vegetarian when I was 19. I was kind of one of those animal lover type kids and teens who always felt sort of guilty after eating, you know, any animal product. Mm-hmm. But honestly, growing up in the 70s and 80s, there wasn't really an option to do anything about it. I come from an immigrant family where you just kind of ate what was on the table and were grateful that it was there. So there wasn't a lot of room for curiosity. But once I started college, I became a vegetarian. I had my first son in graduate school, and he was allergic to any dairy in my breast milk. When I cut out dairy, I stopped having sinus infections or seasonal allergies. I haven't been on antibiotics since I cut out dairy, which is kind of amazing and what a lot of people report. And then I read Jonathan Safran Foer's Eating Animals about 6 years ago, and that was sort of what did it for eliminating any trace dairy or trace eggs, you know, because I was still eating that stuff in pastries or, you know, cupcakes, things like that.
Right. And Mayim, you like to cook.
I was, you know, as I said, my grandparents were immigrants, so I was raised in a very sort of traditional female structured home where cooking and baking were very important. My mom was always in the kitchen. I was raised to be in the kitchen. And, you know, I'm not a fancy person. I'm not a celebrity chef, even though I happen to be a celebrity who put out a cookbook. These are the recipes that mostly I grew up with that I have veganized, things that my mom made, things that other people in my family have made, sort of family recipes for the most part that I've made vegan so that they're still delicious and still able to be enjoyed for all of their, you know, cultural and holiday appropriateness.
And part of the thrust here of the book is to get kids to eat vegetables. It must seem to people very challenging, first of all, to get kids to eat vegetables, any kids, whether they're meat eaters or not, but to present an entire vegan menu to children, particularly challenging.
I honestly, with all due respect, I think it's kind of an oversimplification. You know, I think everyone should be eating more fruits and vegetables and whole grains and foods the way the earth produced them. So the goal of this book was not to write, a cookbook to turn people vegan or to have them raise their children vegan. It was to give a set of recipes that every major medical authority, technically would agree are the way many of us should be eating. So, what we do in the book, Dr. Jay Gordon is a pediatric nutritionist and pediatrician, and he weighed in on the nutrition, we sort of debunk a lot of those sort of classic myths about make children eat their vegetables and this is, you know, how children need to eat. I'm a mom of a 5.5-year-old and an 8-year-old, so this book was written as they were in those stages of learning to eat. The transition to a vegetarian or vegan diet for children can be slower and longer and more difficult than it is for some adults, but again, the thrust of the book is not to do that. It's to present options and ways to think about food that really most of us have not been introduced to. So, as Dr. Gordon will say, it's as important for children to learn what fruit tastes like as vegetables in those first years, to teach children the value of understanding what actual food tastes like so that when they think of what snack they want to eat or will eat, it doesn't have to be a processed cheese that you squeeze out of a piece of plastic. It can be a fruit. It can be a handful of nuts. It can be carrots. It can be, you know, easy spreads that you can make at home.
I have a particular question here about eggs. I find a lot of this appealing, and I have a son who is, pushing to go back to at least be vegetarian, because he spent some years as a vegetarian, then he fell off the wagon, now he's back. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering about the eggs, because this seems like a little extreme to me. Why no eggs in the vegan diet? I know you want nothing to come from an animal, but
sure.
What's the harm in? I had some sautéed leeks this morning, Mayim, and leeks are delicious, right? But I wanted to make an omelet with them, and I did. And
right.
So okay. Why no eggs?
The general notion. I mean, we can have a conversation about how much cholesterol is in an egg, but there's plenty of arguments that the cholesterol can be balanced. It's fine. I think the issue for vegans, and this is sort of what we mentioned in the introduction. Once you do one thing, it makes you start thinking differently, and. In my experience, in my research, in all of the things that I've read and all the people I've spoken to in this journey, anytime you're taking an animal and making it a product, something will suffer. If not the rights, the abstract rights of the animal, then the rights of the workers in the factories, the situation that is created to create the eggs that almost everyone in this country eats is not pleasant for workers or for chickens or for the economy. So, yes, if I had a chicken and it lived in my backyard and it laid eggs, I could probably have an omelet a week or an omelet a day if I wanted to. I don't live in that situation, so to me it's not a relevant argument. But anytime you are capitalizing and corporatizing the production of a product of an animal, even wool, you are dealing with ethical considerations, and for some of us, that's not tolerable.
Okay, that's her answer. What's your answer on the eggs, John? Is it similar?
It's totally similar. If you do any reading, the first book that I read was one of the ones by John Robbins, Diet for a New America, and it just opened my eyes to so many things. I've been in the food business for 40-some years, and when you look at industrial food production, especially with chickens, it makes you consider, do you want to do this? Is this the way that you want, to use product? And there was just too much that made me uncomfortable from many, many standpoints, whether it was health, definitely ethics. It just does not seem like a good thing to do. So I started making the switch then.
I need to make a reference to something that's going on in our radio studio, Mayim. It's the aroma that's coming from something that John brought in for us. And I know this is not in your cookbook. This is in his cookbook. But I just want John to make a reference to this. Just tell me what this is.
No, because this
It smells so delicious.
This is Myams.
Oh, this is.
This is.
Oh,
yes,
what is this?
Absolutely. It's the shepherd's pie. It's awesome.
Oh, nice. I have some in my fridge right now.
Yeah, it's awesome. I brought a couple.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Vegan shepherd's pie.
Oh, yeah, it's so good.
How do you make vegan shepherd's pie, Myam?
I use whatever beans are on hand. I do lentils and garbanzos. They're sautéed with some herbs and celery, usually carrots and onion, a little vegan Worcestershire sauce, a little mustard. I often just serve it to my boys like that, but then you make proper vegan mashed potatoes, which is, you know, you have to use a non-dairy milk and a non-dairy butter, which is not hard to do these days. Those are available in most general supermarkets. You make the mashed potatoes, and you can either bake it, or we serve it side by side, or sometimes my boys just want the sautéed beans and vegetables in a bowl.
Oh, that sounds pretty good to me. Now, John, I didn't realize that this is Myams.
Oh,
this
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I wish we weren't on the radio. Maybe, why don't you two talk and I'll have a taste of this?
No, it's just really, it's delicious. And one of the things I like about it, and it's like Myams said, the recipes in this book are wonderful. They're simple. They're straightforward. I don't think they would intimidate anyone,
really?
You know, and they say, yeah, I can do this. And they just, everyone that I've tested just came out beautifully. And everyone's really, really enjoyed
them. How many did you test?
We've done about 4 or 5 of them.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Myam, I had a question about vegan mac and cheese. It just seems, you know, vegan mac and cheese, another one of those oxymorons for some people, but how do you make vegan mac and cheese?
There are several ways to produce sort of the creamy texture or flavor of cheese if you are vegan. There are a lot of nut cheeses, which are a little more complicated to make, but I have a recipe for a very easy nut cheese where you basically soak whatever nut you want. You can do cashews, you can do walnuts, you can do almonds. If you soak nuts in water for usually 4 to 6 hours, just like in a bowl of water, if you put them in a food processor after or even a small blender, they become like a kind of a pate kind of cheese consistency. Mm-hmm. That cheese can resemble ricotta. It can resemble any number of sort of spread things. If you add a little lemon or a little garlic or some dried herbs, it can be an incredible spread, or you can use it in things like lasagna. For things like mac and cheese, I tend to, once in a while, have a processed soy party and use a processed soy cheese, or Daya cheese is a cheese that's really changed the life of so many vegans. It is not a soy-based cheese, but it melts. It's gooey. It's considered a fun food, as Dr. Gordon points out in the book. These kind of processed vegan products should not be consumed every day. But when I do make mac and cheese as a comfort food, Daya cheese mixed with a little bit of milk and a little flour, just like, you know, you'd make a roux for any other kind of sauce like that, it turns into mac and cheese. Nutritional yeast adds a really cheesy flavor. There's a recipe in my book for risotto that basically is recreating kind of that feeling of Parmesan and butter. So there are a lot of ways that are not crazy. You don't have to go to the hills of the Himalayas to find the ingredients in my book. Most of these can be bought at your standard, you know, grocery store.
John?
Yeah, that's true. And in fact, we tested out the mac and cheese, and I hadn't purchased that cheese before, and it was awesome. I got it
it's
at
Mom's
grocer, and we made a batch of it at the restaurant, and everyone really liked it. The only way I had made it before was like with cauliflower. It was kind of like from that Forks Over Knives book, where you use the cauliflower and you puree that up and get that creamy thing with a little nutritional yeast.
Yeah, that's more complicated than I tend to cook, just because, you know, I have small people always tugging at me and asking for something. So what I tried to present in the book was recipes that I tend to make really much, you know, much quicker than some of those more elaborate things that often do have a richer flavor, though, for sure.
Myam, is there a recipe in the book that your children particularly like?
They love the shepherd's pie, as I said. That's in the fridge right now, and I'll be serving it for lunch when we get off the phone. You know, they like certain sweets. I'm trying to think what they like. The baked ziti is a big hit. That's a little more labor-intensive. It involves two different kinds of cheeses. for that. They love the chocolate peanut butter pie because it's three ingredients and doesn't have to be baked, so I can make it very quickly. But they just finished a banana bread and asked me to make more this morning. So that's my mother's banana bread recipe. It's fat-free. It's one of my easiest things to make. I can make it either as kind of muffin shapes or in little loaves. So that's kind of one of their favorites that they always ask for. That's what they had for breakfast.
Thank you, Mayim. Mayim's Vegan Table is the name of a book. More than 100 great-tasting and healthy recipes from my family to yours, Mayim Bialik. Of course, well-known to many of our listeners from The Big Bang Theory. This book is written with Dr. Jay Gordon, a pediatrician she's referred to a couple of times. The publisher is DeCapo, one of our favorite publishers of lifelong books. A couple of calls. Let's take some calls, questions from Mayim. Mayim, here's Sarah in Baltimore has a question for you. Hi, Sarah.
Yeah, I'm actually, much like you, I'm an attachment parent. I'm concerned about what goes through my breast milk. And I actually want to know what your take on soy really is. I have a girl, you have boys, but, you know, what about the phytoestrogens? How sparingly do you use it?
Right. So the issue is there have been some concerns that overconsumption, which, you know, again, that term can vary, that overconsumption of soy products can lead to sort of hormonal manipulations. We're not really sure. And I think, you know, for the most part, what I try and do is eat foods the way the earth produced them as the main thing that I'm eating. If I eat soy, I do it sparingly, a couple times a week. It's not something I choose to cook with every day or offer my children every day. If we eat out at restaurants, that's often the mainstay of fun vegetarian or vegan options, you know, is a processed soy product. I would rather do edamame, you know, meaning like the pure bean of soybean, rather than a processed soy product. And in general, you know, I'll be honest, this wasn't really an issue when my older son was young. He used to eat sautéed tofu all the time, and I really backed off on it. My second is allergic to soy and very sensitive now to soy. So I don't do it a lot, but they do like veggie chicken fingers, which are almost often, you know, almost always soy-based.
Here's another caller. James in Catonsville, you're on with John Shields and Mayim Bialik.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to try to be concise. I agree with a lot of things that you're saying. I agree that the vegan diet is probably more healthy than the standard American diet. But 2 points, I don't necessarily think it's optimal for your health. There are certain amino acids that you just can't get from non-animal sources to optimize your nutrition. And I'm sorry, and also, but I understand the ethical, your position there. I think our traditional factory farms are completely abhorrent, and that's why when I eat meat, I try to get some sources like our local Clark's Elliott Farm, or I'm not sure if you're familiar with Joel Salatin. I think it's called Holiday Face Farm in Virginia, where they ethically raise a lot of animals in more humane ways. But I mean, what in terms of the ethical standpoint, if you know cows or venison, deer or chicken are in the wild, how do they naturally die? You know, they're brutally killed by predators. Now, I'm not saying that our current system is best, you know, in killing all of these animals in you know very sort of Sinclairian kind of you know back in the days how they used to you know non-humanely kill these animals, but I think there are ways to get animal sources of meat where, I mean, human beings are...
Hold on, James.
Right, so I'd like to speak to, first of all, you can get every amino acid from non-animal sources. B12 is the only thing that's theoretically problematic. Many of us take B12 supplements. You can get a full and complete protein and amino acid diet from non-animal sources. The fact that animals are brutally killed in the wild by predators, that is what animals do in the wild. The fact that we have evolved as Homo sapiens to the place that we can place animals in factories is also a natural aspect of our evolution. But that there are those of us, and that there are many of us, who are choosing not to participate in that is also a natural part of the evolution of this human experience. So for me, I appreciate places that are trying to let animals live their happy lives, and I have cooked grass-fed beef. It's been many years, and I won't do it anymore. you know, I understand that those things exist, and for some people, paying that extra money is worth it. And yes, in theory, it's better if it's not full of hormones and antibiotics, and they're not in a, you know, horrible factory where workers are mistreated and animals are mistreated. However, for me and for many of us, I simply do not want to participate in eating the flesh of an animal. It does not appeal to me. I can get everything I need from not doing that. And the money that it takes to store and feed all of the animals that are feeding this country and this world is exorbitantly disgusting. We should all be disgusted by the amount of money it takes to store these animals so that we can eat them.
And Mayim, I wonder if you had just a little advice for anybody who's been debating this for a time. You know, yesterday I spoke to a 76-year-old man that I know who announced that he doesn't eat meat anymore. I had no idea. I just assumed that he had been a meat eater like everybody else. I remember having dinner with him.
Sure.
And eating meat. But he'd made this choice some years ago. I was surprised at that. I know more and more people think about this, and certainly there's more and more discussion about it nationally. So I wonder, what is your advice? What do you say to people who are sort of on the fence about it, making that leap over, getting away from meat altogether or in large measure and moving toward vegetarianism or even a vegan diet?
I think the fact that it doesn't have to be all or nothing is something I wish someone had told me, because I really didn't understand how to do that. I think the more you experience and learn about other ways to eat, the more it will probably grow on you, at least in your mind, if not in your stomach. I think documentaries like Food Inc. and The Future of Food, I just watched Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, Forks Over Knives. Being afraid to learn information because it might change your life is not how we progress as humans. So I encourage taking that leap to learn more, because it is better for our economy. It's better for everyone's health. It's better for the way we think about food and approach policy about food, for us to eat less processed foods.
Well, Dr. Fowler, thank you very much for being on the show today. Mayim Bialik, on one last thing. You know, you do include your Jewish heritage in these recipes. So vegan matzo ball soup, we're going to find that in the cookbook?
Absolutely. I write for a website called Kveller.com, and I started with the idea for this book from sharing recipes on Kveller. And yes, there is a vegan matzo ball recipe in the book.
Excellent. All right, John?
And we checked out the latkes, too. Awesome.
Awesome latkes.
Yeah. Always a hit to fry up potatoes and onions where I come from.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, Mayim. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you, gentlemen. It was really an honor.
Mayim Bialik, Emmy-nominated actress. Of course, she plays Dr. Amy Farrah Fowler on The Big Bang Theory. And earlier, some years ago, starred in Blossom on television as well. Now, this cookbook, Mayim's Vegan Table. Listen, John, what I'd like to do the rest of the hour that we have with our listeners is get our listeners to call in and talk about what I was just saying. Have you made this transition either to vegetarianism or to the vegan diet? How is that going? What made you do it? Please give us a call. John Shields with me the rest of the hour. We got some more recipes to share. 410-662-8780. Did you make the adjustment? Did you make the leap? Did you jump over the fence? And have you gone to vegetarianism? Did you give up meat? 410-662-8780. Also, if you have recipes to share with us, you can email them in midday@wypr.org, and we'll post them on our Facebook page. Well, I tasted the vegan shepherd pie, and it's very good. I would just... to my taste, a little more salt in the potato on top.
Yeah.
But maybe whoever cooked this goes light on salt, lighter than I do, maybe.
Yeah, at the restaurant, sometimes they go a little bit lighter on it.
Who do we credit with making this at Gertrude's
Forest? Oh, Yolanda made that
Yolanda.
Today. Yeah,
thank
Chef
you.
Yolanda.
Thank you, Yolanda.
She tore it up.
Okay, and the other two things you brought in today for show and tell,
yeah.
And unfortunately it's radio, you can't see it, but this is Mayim Bialik's cornbread.
Yeah,
vegan cornbread.
It's called a creamed cornbread. And it threw me totally off. If you get the book, or if you look at the book, it calls for 1 cup of canned cream corn.
Hmm.
And I thought, well, what does that mean? There must be cream in that. So were we supposed to make our own? And then I was cross-referencing to see if it was in there. Well, it wasn't. Then one of the chefs says, I eat cream corn all the time. It doesn't have any cream in it.
No.
And I didn't know that.
So that's all...
So it has a little bit of that. It has fresh corn kernels in it, or
you're
frozen
saying,
corn.
Excuse me, you thought maybe there was dairy in it.
Yeah, I thought, how can we do this?
So what do you think? I mean, it doesn't look like it rose very much.
You know one of the issues...
They're kind of flat pieces, right?
Issues of that is Yolanda, when she was baking it today, she put it in a really large pan.
Oh.
It should have been a much more narrow pan, or in a muffin tin, and it would have been much higher.
She thought she was making one of Muley sheet cakes.
But if you take that, it turns almost into a polenta if you try it. You could put that out, put
is
a little
yummy?
Tomato ragu on it, a little bit of arugula.
So this
oh, my
is
God.
This is a savory cornbread. It's
yeah,
not
you'll
very
have to,
sweet.
Yeah, you have to check it out. It's got a little sweetness.
Next to it is a lemon meringue pie.
Yeah.
You know I love lemon meringue pie.
Oh, me too. That's my favorite.
Yeah. And you brought one in here a couple of years ago that Doug made over at Gertrude's that was awesome.
Yes.
Just awesome. Just like to the moon and back, Alice.
Yeah. Well, he developed this one for me.
What makes it vegan?
Well, okay. No egg yolks. Now, how do you get the lemon filling without any eggs or egg yolks, right? So what we do is we just, you know, fresh lemon juice. We use a little cornstarch to tighten it, which is normal. But usually the egg yolks, when you cook it, firm it up and give it that signature color.
Right.
So what we do is at the end, we put everything in, just like you're making the tart filling. We put a little bit of turmeric in right at the end. Brightens it right up, looks just like it came with all the lovely egg yolks in it, but not one in there. And then there's this other great thing that I use a lot, and you can get it at any health food store or Whole Foods or any of them, and it's called Energy Egg Replacer. And it comes in a powder form, and basically it's just like rice flour, corn flour,
mm-hmm.
and some leavening.
So it's going to help you hold things together.
Yes. So you put it in a bowl, little bit of warm water, whisk it up, and it starts to froth. So for the meringue, then we just add some sugar, keep frothing, it goes way up. You put it on top of a baked crust, you know, with your filling in the baked crust, and look at the, I mean.
You got beautiful results
you,
there.
You put
have a
it
nice
in the
meringue.
Oven
yeah.
just for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it holds up. We use a torch on it at the end.
Right.
You know, like
to give it a little burn on the
top. Yeah. Gorgeous.
Now, a little creme brulee look there.
Yeah.
Now, John, that one ingredient that you mentioned, that egg replacer,
yeah. uh-huh.
what was it called again?
Energy egg replacer.
See, now, that sounds expensive to me.
It's not.
You wasn't?
It's not.
Okay,
no,
because that's
not.
The other rap on veganism.
Yeah.
That it's elitist, it's extreme, it's expensive.
Yeah.
And you don't find it expensive?
Oh, absolutely not. How much is a potato?
Yeah. What do you eat? I mean, you are completely meatless now, except for tasting that you have to do at Gertrude's?
Generally, yeah. Just, when I'm working on a dish at Gertrude's or developing something, I taste things. Of course I taste things. Or if I'm going out to somebody's house and they made me a beautiful thing with some braised something, of course
do?
I have some
okay.
of that.
But for the most part, feeding yourself during the week, breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so easy. I mean, breakfast is usually a cereal or oatmeal. I make a lot of grain cereal, so I'll use oats and brown rice and any kind of thing that I come up with, some barley. Lunchtime, I love hummus. So I make all different kinds of hummuses just on a piece of whole wheat bread or cracker with some fresh tomato and cucumbers and a little bit of a side salad. That's not so bad.
No, that sounds really good.
And there's a bazillion things that you can have, like for your entrees. And how many pastas can you think of that we can make that are totally vegan?
Right.
Not a problem at all.
You don't miss the eggs.
No, I don't. I really don't miss the eggs at all. I had to do it originally, for health things. You know,
because it sounds like the argument against the eggs is the ethical argument. It can be a health argument if you have a cholesterol problem.
Yes.
Obviously, that goes for anybody.
Yes.
But with Mayim's explanation and yours is that mainly you just don't want to get into that slippery slope of taking products from factory food production.
Yeah,
right?
That's okay. Basically it.
Melissa in Fells Point. Let's hear from our listeners here on Midday Eats. Hello, Melissa. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much.
go right ahead. What did you want to tell us about veganism, vegetarianism?
I've been meat-free. Yeah, I've been meat-free for several years, and then I recently went dairy-free because I had some health issues. And actually, I have to say, it's been very challenging. I really miss cheese. But I've been feeling a lot better, so I try to convince myself that it's a price worth paying. And then not only that, but I recently got married in November to a big carnivore. So we definitely are working on balancing our different food.
Well, tell us about that. That's very interesting to me. I mean, you fall in love, right? And the carnivore
well,
question.
Marriage is about compromise, is what right. I hear. But right. You know, and he doesn't cook, and for me, going meat free or even dairy free was never really about. I mean, there is a certain ethical or political stance I have behind it, but I personally don't feel comfortable, you know, pushing that onto other people, which is why I really appreciated my standpoint, which was that for me, you know, this is her personal view, and she can share it, and people can adopt it, or they don't have to. So we try to compromise, and I put a lot of vegetables on the table, and it so far is working out, but it's certainly been a creative challenge.
Well, are there times? I just wonder how you work it out. Do you say, all right, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I'll cook some meat for you. I'll cook you a hamburger or a steak. But the rest of you're going to have to be vegan with me Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. Have you tried anything like that?
It's not really scheduled like that, but I would say, here's what I'm thinking about making for dinner. And, you know, let's say it's a pasta. And he'll say, well, you know, is there some meat that can go along with that? And I say, well, we have some sausage. I guess we can make that up, you know, and you can put that in your pasta. When I go grocery shopping, I mean, I'll pick up the meat because I know that's what he likes to eat. And for me, it just doesn't appeal to me, but I feel like I can't really deprive him of something that he finds so enjoyable.
Right, right. Okay, well,
yeah.
I'll be curious to talk to you in a year from now, see how that's going. Maybe if you feed him enough really good vegetables, I mean, if you come up with some good recipes, Maybe that's the
right.
ticket. That's the ticket.
Well, they do. I do. I mean, I'm, you know, my spouse is a meat and potato person, and I just started making those pastas that we'd make some meatballs. And
vegan meatballs?
No, just real meatballs.
Oh, real meatballs.
And then make the pasta completely vegan, and then he can have the meatball.
Yeah.
And I don't. But over the years, just as you said, Dan, interestingly,
the meatball goes away?
Meatball's gone now.
Yeah. I can see that happening. Yeah.
Very, very happy with what comes up.
It's expensive, too.
Yeah.
When we're talking about expensive, by the way.
Yeah.
You bring up this rap on veganism as being expensive. What about meat?
Oh, my gosh.
What about beef these days, right? Let's go to Brian in Columbia. Brian, you're on Midday Eats next. Hello.
Hi, how are you? I hope I don't lose you guys. I'm just passing through the tunnel right now.
Okay. Make it quick then.
Exactly. I just wanted to make a comment regarding the framing of the conversation in regard to ethics or morality. And I always find that very strange. You know, I think that there's a strong argument that holds water to discuss it in terms of nutrition, to discuss it in terms of sustainability or the economics of it. Framing it in an ethical construct seems so odd. It seems to me that we discount the very fact that a plant is a living being. And so I have a little trouble comprehending how we make an ethical argument beyond the sort of relativistic fact that, you know, an animal is very much like us. They have eyes, they see, they believe when you cut them. You know, plants respond to stimuli. They're just in a different class of living entity. And I always found it strange that we would frame that in terms of ethics or morality when you must consume life to live.
Okay, Brian. I mean, there are some people who wait until the plant dies before they eat it, right? Or the apple falls from the tree by itself.
Yeah,
okay.
I guess so.
But yesterday, we had Arlo Crawford on the show. He's written a memoir about life on the family farm, an organic farm in Pennsylvania. Very interesting fellow and a very interesting experience. Title of his book, A Farm Dies Once a Year. And to the point about the plants, I mean, they're going to die. You plant corn, that corn's going to turn brown in August and September. And if you don't eat the corn, I guess birds will eat it. I mean, what was the point of planting it if not to eat it? So it seems to me, I guess we could have an ethical discussion here about this for hours.
You could.
I mean, you can only go so far with all of this, I think, right? You got to eat something.
I think what Mayim, I thought she brought through beautifully is that it was what she understood and how she was processing this. And I think with anyone's trying to talk about an ethical thing, it's not about other people's ethics. It's about
yours.
Yours. Their own. How they're processing and what they're
comfortable with. What I just said, I don't have a problem eating a corn, right?
Yes.
Because I understand it's going to die.
Right.
You can plant it again next year and it will grow again.
Yeah.
You know, a deer in the woods, you know, or a cow, a chicken, you know, that's the end of that life.
And
that chicken dies, right?
And I think the other,
what's the difference, Dan?
one of the issues
that just went around in a circle here
that we have is that
is that guy still in the tunnel?
Then we lose food. You know, we lose the idea when we go off on those tangents about it. We just lose the whole idea of just good food. And, you know, vegetables have always, and starches have always been the basis of every plate in society, except for Eskimos, for tens of thousands of years. It just has been.
That's right.
And Thomas Jefferson had said, and he was a very smart man, that meat and fish should be used as a condiment.
Hmm.
And that your plate should basically be made up of vegetables,
really?
Starches, and you would be a healthy person.
He was a progressive, wasn't
he? And then you're finding out years later, after thousands of scientific studies, the man was right on.
Yeah. Yeah. A short break here on Midday. Here's that music again, John. That means it's time for a break on Midday Eats. But folks, we'll come right back and take some more phone calls. 410-662-8780. This is the vegan edition of Midday Eats. Dan Rogers here with John Shields. Henry Hong is not with us because he's off on his honeymoon. Congratulations again to Henry and his new wife, Sarah. Mayim Bialik of Big Bang Theory got us started with this conversation today. She has a new cookbook, Mayim's Vegan Table. So we got onto the subject of veganism, vegetarianism, making the transition from a diet with meat to a diet with no meat. John's done that pretty much, and he said he's veganesque, because you have to take a little taste now and then.
Yeah.
Carrie in Dundalk, we'll go to you next. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. In Baltimore, we're really fortunate to have an organization called Open the Cage of the Lions that sponsors a vegan living program every year. Last year, my husband came to me in about November and said, honey, I just saw this program on TV. It's about people who took a pledge for 5 weeks and, you know, and he kind of teared up and he said, I don't want to eat animals anymore. I don't want to eat my pets. Why would I want to eat other animals? So we found this organization. You do a 5-week pledge and you pledge to be a vegan for 5 weeks. They give you a binder with a lot of recipes in it, ingredient lists, ideas. They assign a coach to you who coaches you throughout this 5-week program. You attend classes every Saturday, and it was amazing. So we got, you know, we were looking into it for a while. The program started in March, so from December to March, we kind of played around with it. On the day of the our first class, we had the Dundalk Parade came through for St. Patrick's Day, and everybody left our house with bags of fish, frozen meat, frozen everything out of our freezer. It was like the oddest party bags of favorites that they had ever seen.
Carrie, excuse me. What is the alliance called again? Would you say the name?
Yes, sir. It's called Open the Cages Alliance.
Open the Cages Alliance. Okay.
Right.
Okay. And it's right here in Baltimore.
It's here in Baltimore. The pledge this year, our pledge, we were hoping for 35 people to be in our pledge program. And we had over 90 pledges.
Hmm. Well, thanks for telling us about it. So,
one more thing. I made an amazing cottage pie, which is the same thing as shepherd's pie last night. If you want, I can send the recipe.
Sure, please send it. midday@wypr.org. I just want to mention, you know, Breathe Bookstore Cafe in Hamden, they provide lunch for our guests on Wednesdays. And I started, you know, sometimes we don't have as many guests as we do on other days, so I started sampling it. It's very good.
It's good, isn't it?
Very
I've been
good.
Over there. They do a great job.
Yeah,
they really do.
And Susan over there, she says, make sure everybody knows that we serve vegan mac and cheese, shepherd's pie, and the other foods that we're talking about on the show today.
So, yeah. Don and Renee Gorman, who had Puffins. Do you remember Puffins?
Puffins? Yeah.
They are the greatest people, and they sell at the Waverly Farmers Market every week. They make things for Over at Breathe as well, and they do a great job.
Janet in Baltimore County. John is our next caller. Janet, welcome to the show.
Hi. I just tuned in to Amy Fowler's conversation, and I find this really interesting. But, I mean, I don't really think there is like an all. It doesn't necessarily have to be all or nothing. I have been doing vegetarian diets about 4 to 5 days a week. I don't think I'll ever give up meat, but I do it because I like it. It just, it's a conflict with family and so forth. But, you know, I find 4 to 5 days a week and just eating meat maybe, you know, a couple days a week is enough to satisfy my desire for, you know, a steak or some chicken now and then. And it works. And my husband now is, you know, he's adopted more of a vegetarian diet as well as time has moved on. And I do it for health, but I also do it, it is cheaper, and I also do it for environmental sustainability. I mean, it takes a lot of energy, a lot of plants to feed one steer. So I think it's just better for the environment as well.
Janet, thank you very much for those
comments. That's a good thought.
A lot of common sense in there. It's at least a good way to get started, right?
Well, you know, they say that a lot of the environmental organizations, the UN, World Health, if you just would give up meat, if you ate meat on a regular basis, if you give it up one day a week, just one day a week, you have more of an environmental impact than if you went out and got a hybrid car and put solar panels on your roof. Just that one day. So it's not... not that big of a deal.
Yeah. So that takes it out of the realm of moralizing.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I don't think it's moralizing to make that argument about food, to actually, as Mayim Bialik said, to actually think about what you're doing.
Exactly.
And not resent this conversation as a completely immoral argument about whether you're being cruel to animals or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's an environmental impact to it.
Yeah.
There's a health element to it, obviously.
Indeed.
So, anyway, Carol in Ellicott City, you're our next caller on Midday. Thank you.
Thank you. I love that you're doing this show. I bought Mayim Bialik's cookbook on my Kindle, and I bought it because I'm a meat and potatoes, cheese, butter, and bread person all of my life, but now I have diabetes. I'm on an insulin pump 24/7. I only have one kidney, and I have chronic kidney disease stage 3. So what I eat is very important to me. And because of my kidney problem, I can't have a lot of potassium, and all my favorite vegetables and fruits, like tomatoes and bananas, have a huge amount of potassium. So Mayim's cookbook was wonderful because it opened me to a lot of other vegetables that I could enjoy learning about and eating and using. But the problem I'm having now is that I've developed an allergy to peanuts. So things like using peanuts as, or any kind of nuts as a base instead of butter, I can't do. My throat swells up and
Carol,
I choke, and I've actually been in the emergency room. So
Carol, I'm not sure she can hear me. Have you sought the advice of a dietitian?
Working with a dietitian, but I'm wondering if you could suggest where I could find more vegan type recipes that are not necessarily based on nuts.
I don't have that. John, do you have any advice there?
There's a great resource here in Baltimore. It's called Earth Save Baltimore, a wonderful organization. So just look it up. They have lots of great resources on their website. They have meetups, all kinds
all
of things.
All about veganism and cooking.
Yeah, and
you think that someone there might know how to help Carol?
Oh, yeah, they have dietitians. They give lectures. Very good organization.
Carol, it's Earth Save Baltimore. So, John, thank you very much for that. Good luck with that, Carol. Chris in Baltimore, you're on next. Hi.
Hi, guys. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Oh, welcome.
And I've just been listening to what you all have been talking about, and I myself am in a wheelchair, and I'm kind of overweight. I also find the I've ethically thought that eating more vegetarian was a good thing. Basically, I'm on a budget, and I have somewhat limited mobility, and I'm going to look up the Open the Cages Alliance and Earth Save Baltimore, but I'm looking to find resources, ways that I could basically get more towards a vegan diet.
Well, that's a challenge there, Chris. Handicapped, he has difficulty with complex cooking and accessing stores and markets where he can buy more of that food.
Just your general grocery store. If you go in the vegetable produce section.
Yeah.
One of the things I do all the time, and I do it in a million different ways, is either with potato or with a sweet potato. Sweet potatoes are my godsend. I throw them in the oven, and I'll just put a couple other veggies with them, or some. You can even use some frozen veggies.
Mm-hmm.
You have a whole meal, and you're so happy. It makes you smile. Take a baked sweet potato, and it'll make you smile.
So that's pretty easy cooking,
so
isn't it?
Easy.
Yeah. I wonder if there's another organization that could help him. If anyone has advice, is our caller still on the line? I'm sorry. You know, I don't even remember his name now.
Chris.
I'm sorry, Chris. Maybe would you stay on hold for us and give us your name and phone number?
Sure.
And if someone heard your story, can help you, we'll try to get back in touch with you. How's that?
That would be great.
Okay. Yeah, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but maybe someone else will. Kayori, welcome to Midday. Hi.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm good. What did you want to say today?
Actually, I had a couple of comments. One was that I have been a lifelong vegetarian. I was raised that way. So I appreciate your show 20 years ago when I was younger. I couldn't even imagine having a show like for vegetarianism and veganism entire radio spectrum, probably. So this is amazing, first of all. And secondly, I wanted to make a comment about the caller who called from the tunnel about why we kill plants to eat vegetables. My comment is, well, you don't kill the whole entire plant. You just take the fruit of it. The plant lives on. It regenerates. It regrows. So ethically, if you're thinking about it, the plant is not dead when you finish eating it. You're taking the fruits and vegetables off of it.
Well, you're correct up to a point. In the case of trees that produce fruit, that is true. Perennials, you have to make some effort to plant them again, although there is such a thing as volunteer corn.
Yeah.
But you don't want to count on that, would you? But Kayori, point taken, at least on fruits, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's true. I can't think of what vegetable keeps coming back.
Rhubarb, asparagus.
Asparagus comes back.
Yeah. There's a lot of them that just regenerate every year.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much for making that point. She's impressed that we're even talking about this.
Yeah,
actually,
that's great.
There's been a lot of talk about
There has been.
We're not breaking any ground here. It's just I think maybe some people are surprised. I am sometimes surprised at the people who tell me that they don't eat meat anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I keep running into this. Chuck in Shepherdstown, out West Virginia. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
I have a question about, I saw this neuroscientist on public television fundraiser program. He wrote a book called Grain Brain. And, of course, his thing is a gluten-free diet. Also, no sugar. I haven't heard anything. It sounds like veganism incorporates a lot of grains and therefore gluten.
Yeah, I think that's right, John. I mean, you said yourself you eat grains.
Yeah,
that's a regular part of the diet. We didn't address gluten today. I'm sorry.
No.
Maybe we'll do a gluten-free show another day.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. We'll have to do that.
And we're out of time? Are we really out of time? The whole hour's gone? This is the end of the week? This is the end of the midday week, just like this? I didn't realize we were out of time here. If you want to do a gluten show, we can do a gluten-free show.
All right.
Because I can't tell you how many gluten-free cookbooks show up here now.
Unbelievable.
There's a lot of them, aren't there?
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess we ought to talk about that another day. And next time John's here. Or maybe in the future sometime.
Okay.
Another Midday Eats. John Shields from Gertrude's Restaurant in the Baltimore Museum of Art. Great guy. Joins us once a month, usually with Henry Hong, who's off on his honeymoon from Midday Eats, our foodie hour here on WYPR. John, I'm going to have some more of that shepherd's pie, vegan shepherd's pie. I'm going to try that lemon meringue pie that Doug sent over here.
Oh, absolutely.
And thanks again to Yolanda for the cornbread too, right?
Great.
And the book again, folks, it's Mayim Bialik's Mayim's Vegan Table, published by DeCapo and Lifelong Books. Have a great afternoon. Have a great weekend. Try some vegan cooking this weekend. See if you like it. We'll catch you again on Monday.